All right. Okay, well, good afternoon. This is a policy session regarding the 2017 federal and state legislative agendas. We have Director of Public and Governmental Affairs, Gary Schmidt, and Chris Lyons is here as well, so we'll talk about all this. Chris, are you going to take the lead?
You bet.
Okay, good, thanks.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Chris Lyons, Public and Government Affairs, coming before you today to hopefully finalize our 2017 state and federal legislative agendas and get those approved so that we can move forward with advocating on your behalf. This is following up from our previous meetings with you, which occurred in October and the very beginning of November, where we were presented draft agendas for your review and received some guidance and direction for additional edits to the documents. So before you today is an updated version of our draft priorities, and we have highlighted the items within them that have changed since we last spoke with you. I will limit my discussion to those specific items unless you have any other questions on any of the other items that we've already discussed.
I will have a couple of questions at some point.
So you're going to go down to land use, right?
So that is our first highlighted section.
So the section above it, Art Road, you know, for years I never understood what that meant. So this actually is the 99 section of Art Road, correct?
This is...
There's a 1980. There's a 1987 transportation study. I found it when I was cleaning my office, going through my office and moving stuff out. So maybe I'll have that copy of that made. You have staff generate copies so we all read it. And in there, there's a few proposals of an alignment. So if you take out this section between, because this went from actually from I-5 all the way to 213 through Molino or near Molino.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just take out the Canby section, that's the area we're talking about. There's an alignment that goes over the existing crossing of the Pudding River and through the dealership of Landmark Ford, or is it Canby Ford. There's one alignment. The other alignment is goes where the Walgreens is, makes a right, and makes two trips over the river or near the trestle, or the alignment with the trestle that goes right directly to Art Road.
So, I mean, I just somehow need to be more specific about what we're talking about. This is about the Canby connection to Art Road.
Okay. Or actually
right.
I-5,
right?
The I-5 thing confuses it. It's Canby's connection to Art Road from 99E.
So if you're on Art Road heading east towards Canby, at one point it takes a 90-degree turn to the left.
Right.
The goal is to instead keep Art Road going straight and ultimately go over the river into Canby and connect to Knightsbridge, or right. Berg Parkway, sorry. And so staff have been working with Canby. We had received a tweak to DLCD rule so that we're able to get an alignment approved through that farmland, which is currently designated rural reserve, so that we can look at a new alignment through there to improve the access.
Yeah, so all I'm suggesting is that we be a little more clear about what section of that 80-whatever proposal we're talking about. Not an I-5 off-ramp or on-ramp from Art Road. And I think if you say to I-5, you are...
opening up a can of worms.
Yes, so I'm just talking about that end, and just so some way to make sure that we talk about the Canby Canby intersection of 99E and Art Road.
Well, see, this will have a huge impact on the city of Barlow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Which is not really a city. Well, it is a real city, but it's...
So I believe the current thinking on the alignment would actually go behind Canby Ford over the river and then dump into Canby there. So I don't know how much would actually affect Barlow city limits. It would actually bypass Barlow, I believe. and go straight into Canby.
You've got that Vala Road intersection that goes straight.
That's all I want is to be clear that we're talking about that intersection, wherever it is. I-5, Hart Road.
Right, yeah, so we could add some clarification, say, between X and Y. And in our materials that we're putting together that I will use in Salem to verbally communicate with legislators, we'll have an actual map showing what that segment will look like and where exactly it is.
So there's already approval, if I recall, for the old alignment, which goes through the Ford dealer. There's already approval, EIS or something like that.
Probably there was one done, but it's been, since I got there, moved there in the late, in the early 80s.
This is coming from ODOT. ODOT says you've got the green light to go this way, but if you want to change the alignment to the new, at least what the previous mayor had indicated, and you want to go by the police station over and create a new crossing, which is, by the way, more expensive too, right? Because you need to build a river crossing. So that needs to really be determined. But either way, I think this legislation is important that we got a green light on the land use side.
Yeah, but it's also key that we don't want to diminish the importance of 205 and Sunrise Phase 2. So while this is important to the city of Canby, our priority in the county is still I-205 and the Sunrise Phase 2. Okay?
Correct.
Next item.
Next item. So this is more or less placeholder language. We added the language about the mid-cycle changes to the UGB that is a proposal that Metro is putting forward at the legislature this session. What I would advise is, in light of your policy session scheduled for next Tuesday, that we hold on this specific item until you've had that more in-depth discussion on the county's next steps with land use. And also at that policy session, we could prepare some language that would go into this section.
Could you enlighten me on Metro's effort? You said it's the legislature. What is that?
So it's stemming out of their Urban Growth Management Task Force that's been meeting, and it would allow for mid-cycle changes to the UGB specifically for residential.
Sub-regional planning, in essence, or not?
I think that's how some would like to characterize it.
But you wouldn't characterize it?
I think it's one way trying to get at that, yes.
Is there a bill, is there language right now?
There is, yes.
Okay. They're good to have.
Yep.
Just want to see what it is.
So I don't know how our discussion next week would have anything to do with this wording. I mean, I like the wording.
Seems wordy.
What's in here now? Support solutions to address Clackamas County's land use needs. Oh, well, maybe not. Maybe we should wait. I get it. I see it.
It might be helpful to get more specific next week.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Next.
I just want to mention with the franchise fees, we understand that the cities of Wilsonville and Happy Valley oppose this priority that we have on our agenda, although I would point out this is essentially in direct response to what is coming from the cities. And so we're working with AOC on that effort, as is special districts.
Yeah, this is a larger issue.
Yeah. Right.
So should we maybe just talk about that a little bit for Ken's benefit, a little bit to lay the background on that? So what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we didn't really have this issue here in Clackamas County to deal firsthand, and then what started with the cable that we talked about earlier, the broadband thing, is that this right-of-way got introduced. Administrators are aware of this quite well. And so the ice was broken with the City of Oregon City instituting a franchise fee, which grew into a number of areas.
CRW got hit with that fee.
And you guys got hit with that fee, right.
So backwards way of taxing, frankly. Yeah.
So what we advocated for is, okay, we understand the private side, but for public utilities, for the benefit of the public at large, that we shouldn't be charging one another, and maybe we forgive each other. So that kind of grew into other cities, I think, picking up interest in that and doing that in Clackamas County, and it spread to a big, huge issue in Washington County. And so now Washington County's on board with enough horsepower, I think, to make, get some momentum on this. But I think it's proper, I have no issue with the cities or the League of Oregon Cities advocating for the right for franchise fees in general to private utilities. But I think when it comes to public utilities, there ought to be a different set of rules, right? We're serving the same people.
I think I can probably shortcut that, but I just don't think it's appropriate for one government agency, especially in local government, to be taxing another local government agency. If you need to raise funds for any specific purpose in your particular community, then go to your ratepayers or go to your voters and taxpayers and ask them for the money and justify it. This is backwards. This is basically hiding a fundraising mechanism by passing it on to someone else and not having to account for it. And so I tend to agree.
Right, and some people are calling it the...
You need to talk to them.
Oh, I've spoken to a couple of them on this particular issue, so, and I don't agree with them on this one. I think governments should be taxing each other.
Right, and I think there's folks been raising, you said the word hidden, but, or hiding, but it's been raised as a hidden tax or hidden fee because you pass this on to another government. It's built into the bill by the jurisdiction who's been burdened with that and passing that on out of their control.
Yeah.
Wes is a great example of that.
So, the county doesn't have any objection whatsoever covering the costs of our, the actual costs of our presence in city rights of way. None whatsoever. But I'll just draw a comparison for you with regard to the Tri-City Service District and the 6% charge that the City of Oregon City assesses against the Tri-City Utility Services, the revenues raised within the City of Oregon City to Tri-City, which I think the last time we checked it, it generated a cost of about $250,000 to the ratepayers in Oregon City and increased the rates to customers there by $1.20. But the more concerning part about it is the issue of equity, because if you actually, they apply the very same 6% against their own local retail sewer collection utility there. And but if you look at a comparison with regard to line feet of actual use of right-of-way within the city, the price per line foot for that 6% against the city's utility is less than $1. And as I recall, I'd have to go back and double check, the price per line foot to the Tri-City Service District, because there's much less line footage running through the city's right-of-way, is like $16 a line foot. So we're talking about a substantial disparity between the price per line foot that gets charged between the local collection system and the wastewater treatment arterial system there. And it's having some discussion about what equity looks like with respect to those, I think, is a really good conversation to have. So similar kind of statistics with the 5% charge that Gladstone has been adopting. Same kind of dynamics.
The only thing I'll add to that, there's one little sting, for instance, I'll give you that kind of stings me a little bit, and that is where there's some roads that are now in city ownership, but they were built by us, including laying the line. So we built the road, we built the line.
And now we've got to pay for them some more.
And we're paying for the own line and road that we put in for free to serve the very same citizens. And so I think that's a little bit of a sting.
Well, from a utility point of view, the CRW goes in, has a water leak, they go in, they dig it up, they fix it, and they repair the road back into the condition that is required by law, which is considerably better, frankly, than it was. And a good example is right there on 213, even though I know that's a state highway area, but they paved all the way to the center line and several hundred feet each direction. So they're paying for tearing up the road, repairing the road, and doing all that, as they should. Why then be charged again on the idea that somehow there's some additional cost? doesn't make any sense to me. It's just, to me, it's just, again, it's a backwards tax, a hidden tax, and it's a way to get revenue without actually being responsible for going to the public and saying, this is what we need and why.
And I'm not quite sure about this, but how they spend the money might be different. Usually when you do a sewer line, or you use that money to maintain the system.
And I believe the municipality has the discretion to decide how those funds are used, and in the case of Oregon City, they have some, they enacted their own local limitations on the uses, I recall. I'd have to ask them again or take a look at it, but I thought they limited the use of those funds. But as I understand it, it is essentially a general fund revenue, technically, is what these funds can be, is a revenue to the general fund. I don't think that's the case in Oregon City. We can find out for you.
Okay. Next item.
Okay. I've highlighted surviving spouse tax relief. That was a new item, board direction, and also confirmed that Senator Alan Olson intends to bring bills on both the veterans tax relief and the surviving spouse tax relief. So I'm expecting to see those introduced.
Great.
Film and media production. This is an item we've had on our agendas in the past that we didn't this past time until we more recently learned that there will be legislation, again, trying to get some additional state incentives on this, and it would be a big benefit to our industry here in the county.
Okay.
Okay. Down to H3S, we have changed a word here on the rental protection for tenants to monitor. We don't really know yet what is coming. We know that Speaker Kotek is focused on this issue, and we'll definitely see bills on this, but we don't know specifically what they will be, so we'll be tracking those, and they are sure to be controversial, and we will come back to you as needed for additional direction.
Let's see if we get some there.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is going to, we got to ask that question. We went to see her housing person. We have a new board coming on, so we have to get that.
Yeah. And under air quality, we've added a bit more to our section there to clarify that specifically we're hoping to see additional resources for DEQ to be able to continue their efforts on that. Our preference would not be that the region takes the lead on a new entity or something to oversee the region's air quality. Mm-hmm. And finally, this last one was another request from the board to add to our behavioral health reform section. Okay. And those are the only new additions to the agenda.
Just so you know, a number of these things are always things that are on the legislative issue. A law library, I see there again. Okay.
Yeah, so happy to entertain any questions you have on the state agenda.
I just want to throw one thing out. It came up in a side conversation at AOC yesterday, and that is the distracted driving, drunken driving, those types of things, impaired driving. And I'll just lay it out like this, is that our ability, if we wanted, you know, like we have our drives towards zero, whatever it is, TAZ or whatever get the acronym is, that what if we were to take some of our law enforcement general fund obligations and package that into programs, and almost like a grant, like we almost grant our other department or another department a specific purpose. Okay, here's a batch of funds, and could the OSP be part of one of the people that could apply for those funds? So the reason what's coming up here is Lane County, for example, has had a tremendous increase in traffic deaths in Lane County. and is attributed to, they attribute it to, their commissioners attribute it to the fact that they, because their forest money and SRS money being, going away, that they had, they may have had a massive reduction in sheriff's funding, in their sheriff's department's funding. So they're number one in the state for traffic deaths. Clackamas County's number two. We're just below that. Population's similar, they're 320 or 350,000, somewhere in there, so it's a similar population. And so they haven't done the analysis, but we need to do the analysis. And after talking to the sheriff to figure out where are those occurring on state highways, or are they occurring on county roads, and what's the percentage? So I think the Sheriff Roberts rightfully brought to my attention that, well, maybe some of these are having on state roads, and those are those state roads that we actually police or enforce a program, like a drunk driving or distracted driving program. But it's strikingly high, and it's actually kind of a concern in the Pacific Northwest. When I was at the AOC, me and Martha went down to the NACO.
Went
down to Long Beach. Martha wasn't in the room at the time, but they did a national analysis or survey stats on how the country's doing on this Drive Towards Zero Death initiative, which is nationwide, coast to coast. And the Pacific Northwest is, we have the worst numbers, basically. Our numbers are terrible, comparatively. We're going the wrong direction, they're going the right direction. So I'm trying to grapple with as to what and why we can do to kind of get in front of that. And can we work as an agency or package a effort in that sense to work with OSP? So do we know if that's actually legal for us to do that? I mean, it would be, if not, maybe there'd be a means of us exploring that as far as legislation.
Well, we do that all the time for seat belts and drunk driving. The state funds additional times for the sheriff's department to do that, and I'm not sure about distracted driving if they've done that. I think I remember recently they did that.
Thanks.
But we'd have to ask the sheriff. I was a little confused. I thought you were talking about the sheriff's budget setting aside some money to go after distracted driving.
Well, I think we're all presuming that, and I did too. I mean, I'm presuming that part of our budget allocation to the sheriff's department is built in there, taking care of some of these things. And was brought to my attention from having lunch with the sheriff that, well, part of that activity is taking place on state roads. So I don't know if that necessarily meant that we don't do those issues or look out for those concerns on state highways versus county roads. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. But I assume we did, frankly, because Lane County does. Lane County makes a direct association saying, that doesn't matter if it's a county road or a state road.
Our sheriff's office pulls.
You're drunk driving, we're going to pull you over.
They pull people over no matter whose road it is.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
We do that.
Because I know they patrol 99E, right? That's a state highway.
Mm-hmm. Well, so is I-205, right? They're there all the time.
I guess the question I would ask on that is, has anybody looked at what other jurisdictions are doing that are getting lower rates than we are of deaths, and compared that to what we are or are not doing locally? The other thing that I would look at would be especially like weather condition type places such as upper middle west, which has a lot of snow and we certainly get our share of it. What do they do that reduces accidents compared to what we're doing?
I think that the Public Safety Committee, I think that's what it's called, Traffic Safety Committee, has a report that I think maybe we need to have them come in again and give it to us. I think that the statistics don't really tell the whole story. We have had more, but I think that we need to have a report from the
might be due
from
to
them.
Geography. We don't know what some of the causative factors are.
Yeah. So let's look at getting a report from our Traffic Safety Committee. Okay, so let's move on to the federal agenda.
Okay, and the federal agenda is unchanged from the last presentation. Our federal lobbyists have also taken a look and feel that it's still relevant to what will be coming and that it did not need any changes. So.
Okay. Commissioner?
I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were going to jump to the federal. Did I? I had a couple of questions.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. They both revolve around the collective bargaining issues that are on page 3. The collective bargaining one, the language is a bit obtuse. I'm not sure what the intention is. So if somebody would explain that to me, I'd appreciate it.
Between contract periods and threatens scarce public resources?
Yeah, so the,
I mean,
yeah, so the language.
What's the problem and what are they trying to solve or prevent or whatever?
Yes, the language is opposed legislation affecting interim bargaining negotiations that reduces employer flexibility between contract periods and threatens scarce public resources. This was a request from our Employee Services Department based on their work with their Association of Other City and County Human Resources Professionals. Julia Getchell, the Assistant Director of the Department, is our lead negotiator at the county and who is the one who requested this. Unfortunately, she is out of the office right now to specifically answer your question. So we can only say this is a request from the department, that this was important to their function to help make sure that it's not reducing rights, it's just to make sure there's no further elimination of the rights of the employer in contract negotiations and collective bargaining. So what we can do is if you have concerns, we can hold on this item until we can brief you on what it means and then bring it back to you as a board, because certainly want to make sure all of you are comfortable with everything on here before we bring it forward, and we just can't answer that in detail for you right now.
Okay, well, I would like to know more about that one. And, okay. And the second one is, it says opposition permitting bargaining units of only supervisory personnel. Aren't our supervisors hourly? Are our supervisors hourly?
It depends on the position. Yeah. They typically are not hourly, so.
I guess my question
paid a salary.
Okay, yeah. I was just kind of curious as
this
to why we
were. This is a sheriff's issue, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. Yeah. It was a request from the sheriff's office, and again, I rely on Julia to fill in the details. But it's related to employees who are, you know, sheriff's lieutenants, I believe, who are supervisory in nature. They supervise people. They receive a salary rate.
They're now management.
But now they're management, considered management, and it's a different role than the manager position. So the supervisor versus manager role, to keep supervisors on the same, you know, platform as managers in the sheriff's department. Otherwise, this would have created a disconnect between those two levels of management.
And this has been going on for a while. This usually surfaces every session.
What's the difference between a supervisor and a manager?
Really?
Well, when you refer to a supervisor, you're talking about somebody that may supervise a work group within a program. When you're talking about a manager, you're talking about somebody who manages a program or a division of the department, so a broader responsibility. In terms of hierarchy, you know, a manager may have a number of supervisors reporting to the manager, as a supervisor would have line staff there. Yes.
Okay. So. In terms of the supervisor, is there some particular reason why we would want we would say that employees shouldn't be able to organize if they wish?
I don't know that we say they can't.
It implies, I mean, because the opposition language implies that that's what we're suggesting, and I'm curious as to why.
Yeah, so we'll get Julia. I believe that there's probably some history, as with the prior bullet
that
item,
is always the case.
That has led to this issue being surfaced in the way, and it's probably an issue that is not unique just to us, but among other local governments as well. But the way I'm reading this, units of only supervisory personnel, in other words, not trying to create bargaining units that are simply solely supervisors, which is a unique classification group. You know, supervisors will have confidentiality responsibilities with respect to the employees they supervise. So it's a
that leads to a question. Mm-hmm. Then who writes the performance evaluations, the managers or the supervisors with respect to the subordinate employees?
They do them differently in different departments, some better than others, I'll tell you that. But it's the supervisor that's most responsible for seeing that the performance evaluations are done and written for the folks that report to them. So the managers are responsible for making sure the supervisors get that work done and hold them accountable for that. The directors hold the managers accountable for that. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to
our federal agenda. Oh, and you said...
So no specific issues. If you have any questions, happy to answer those.
This reinvestment looks good. Okay. There seems to be a change in the air quality with an emphasis on securing additional resources for the Department of Environmental Quality to administer these activities. So you guys changed that?
I think that's under state.
Yeah.
Oh, it's under state, sorry.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with any of this.
I think this is all...
All right.
Looking good.
Any other questions on this? All right, thank you.
So we are seeking a formal vote or head nod that this is your 2017 state and federal legislative agendas.
Except for the one that we're going to look into.
The two items under employee services for the state agenda, we will not include at this point until we can brief you all and then come back to you on those two.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved by Commissioner Savas and seconded by Commissioner, what's your name? Schrader. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Motion carries. Is there anything else?
We are done for the hour.
Actually, before we conclude, we did want to quickly review the legislative process document. It's actually the second page in the packet. Just especially for the benefit of our new commissioner, in terms of how we handle issues coming down the pike at the legislature, what we have here is if it's an issue that aligns with an item on our legislative agenda, that's something we run with. We have that authority from the board. If it is not on our agenda, we will, assuming time allows, come before you, before the full board, for direction on that. But if for some reason it's we need a very quick answer, usually that happens towards the end of session, that is where we would have our director of the department reach out to our county administrator and chair for additional direction on that.
Actually, and vice chair.
Yeah.
Special ops.
You know, I yesterday at AOC, I didn't pick this up a year before last. Maybe I didn't attend the January meeting, but or it's every 2 years. Every 2 years, AOC adopts their guiding principles for their committees. And I thought, what a concept. And the rationale is that in the event of the fast-changing legislative session, that they've got guiding principles which will guide the staff and the lobbyists and all their folks into how they act quickly without violating any, and they rely on that in a short term before maybe they can gather the committee up again to chime in on this. So I was thinking, well, what if we applied on certain key issues that are hot, that are important to us, some basic principles as well that will help you along in Salem when you're trying to respond to something, knowing that here's some guidelines, if you will. Just throw that out there. I thought it was an interesting tool.
Yeah, we try our best to anticipate what's coming and draft our agenda in a flexible manner so that we are able to act nimbly down there. But it's impossible to predict everything. So I think there's definitely value to looking at principles or ways to broadly capture issues so that we don't have to come back to you every time.
Create a new bureaucracy for you to do your work. I've had some experience down at the legislature with staff, and I think they do a great job. And whenever there's a question, we hear, come to us. Unless it's really, we've had notices the midnight one night and a decision the next morning. In that case, special ops would get together, which is a chair, vice chair, and staff, and we would talk about what we need to do on that, and then after that, we'd let the rest of the commission know where we are. But maybe for our guiding principles itself in those special ops meetings, we might talk about what we want to do.
it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, well, the other thing, too, is we don't have to create a lot of work or reinvent a will. We could literally just maybe, for example, one, just take some, take what the AOC has today and say, what do we agree with? Because there are AOC positions as well.
Yeah.
And what do we agree with? And maybe we just use that as the model and make a couple changes and say, we'll adopt that, and bingo, we don't have to do a whole lot of work.
There's a heck of a lot of committees that have principles. My committee has, you know, 3 pages of principles.
Mine just has one.
One?
My housing.
You need to add more.
Nope, we do 1 pagers. That's it.
All right, anything else?
Nope.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so.
I wanted to.
Are we adjourned?
Yeah.